The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
Welcome back to The Bill Myers Show, 106.3 KMED, 99.3 KCMD.
Oregon 2nd District U.S. Congressman Cliff Bentz back on the program. How is it this morning in the swamp there, Cliff? Welcome back. Great to have you on.
In the swamp. It's great here. It's supposed to get up to 88 degrees today here in Washington.
Ooh, 88 degrees in D.C. is miserable, Congressman. You know, I mean, 88 here is just kind of like a nice day, but 88 there, oh my gosh. You're going to be all in the air conditioning, right? That's all there is to it.
I'm going to be catching an airplane out of here a little afternoon to fly up to Minnesota, where I think it's much more like Oregon temperatures to have a hearing on the wolves. So I won't be here for the next day or so.
Speaking of flying out there, is there some progress on making Reagan International, having more long-distance flights out of that? Did that get approved? I read some kind of story that there's a push on making Reagan rather than Dulles, because I hate flying in and out of Dulles. I don't know if you do, but or not.
I'm with you on that. I'd much rather fly into DCEA here right in downtown Washington. No, sadly, the exercise in expanding the number of slots available failed by just a few votes.
Oh.
But the hope has been to add a few more flights, even though there's an awful lot of them now. But they could fit a few more in, but there's a lot of there's a lot of folks that don't want that to happen because they have a lock on the market, and why would they want to expand it? So that's where we are.
Because it's also very expensive to fly in and out of Reagan on D.C., as contrasted to Dulles. And so it's like, you know, flying in and out of Dulles is like flying on a Greyhound bus, you know, is kind of the way I look at it. But anyway, I'll set that aside here right now, okay? Hey, okay. I wanted to talk to you. So you're flying to Minnesota. A big thing that you have been doing, you've been holding hearings and pretty much scorching the situation about the gray wolf, because you've been pushing to get the gray wolf off the endangered species list. And I was wondering if you could tell us why, what has been driving this, and what are you hearing? I know you've held several town halls, especially in eastern Oregon, on this very subject.
Right. Thanks for asking. We've had three town hall meetings, one down in the Klamath, one in Crook County and Prineville, and then one up in Pendleton. And the focus was on the number of wolves that we have in Oregon and the damage that they do to not only cattle operators, but also deer and elk herds. We don't have any moose, but the wolf kills for a living. I mean, that's just nature, right? I call it a natural born killer because that's exactly what it is. But the Endangered Species Act requires that we have enough to sustain their population. Oregon's Fish and Wildlife Department's done a good job where they're allowed to do it to control those numbers. Unfortunately, Oregon is bisected Highway 395. The wolves on the west side are protected under the Endangered Species Act. The wolves on the east side are not. And that means a rancher, and I've got a bunch of good constituents who have ranches that are bisected by the highway. On one side, they can protect their herds. On the other side, they cannot. It's ridiculous. But the real question is, Bill, how many wolves is enough? And that leads you immediately into what is the purpose of a wolf?
Right.
And many people would say, well, there's not too much purpose at all. We have an apex predator called man, and we can control the number of elk and deer and moose with hunting. So why do we need to bring into the mix wolves? And so that decision has been made. The Endangered Species Act requires that we have wolves, but we don't need to have more than necessary to achieve their purpose, and that purpose should be just sustaining their population, and that population needs to be pretty small.
Is there a way to put a number on that, though? Because, you're right about it. It seems weird, though, that if you're west of the highway, 395, then no protection for your herd. And then if you're on the east side, then you can. It just seems, is that because there are just more over on that side? They're just counting, and that everybody's supposed to have wolf equity? Is that kind of the way they're looking at this from the Endangered Species Act? You know, if there's not an apex predator chewing stuff up in your neighborhood, sorry, you know, we have to bring you one. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. I think we should have you as a witness in our hearing.
Okay.
The challenge of how many is enough, of course, is a biological question. Mm-hmm. And the issue is pretty clear. If you want to have wolves, then you need to have a sustainable population of wolves. You don't need to have thousands of them, which is the case in Minnesota. They have between 3,500 and 4,000 wolves. We here in Oregon have around 200 wolves, 25 packs of wolves in Oregon, about 6 to 8 animals per pack. And for the amount of land that's conducive to, you know, harboring wolves, that's about right. And ODFMW has determined that that's about the proper number of wolves. And so the numbers that are necessary can be established by biology. What's really a problem, to your point about wolf equity, is that there's this thought that somehow wolves are not what they really are. They're just, you know, kind of like a schnauzer that you have in your house and everything's fine and you don't have to worry about them. The truth of it is, Bill, they kill for a living. That's how they stay alive, and they don't kill in a nice way. So people who think that they are just, you know, out eating a mouse here and a mouse there, that is not true. And so people need to understand the nature of the wolf and understand that if we're going to have them, and we are, let's have the minimum number necessary to maintain their population.
Yeah, so there'd be a little lighter regulatory stamp on that. So there was debate on, in fact, there's a video that came out on you, H.R. 764, the Trust the Science Act. Is this some legislation that it would actually direct a federal biologist to determine this or lighten up on this kind of regulation?
The Trust the Science Act says they need to be delisted. And what happened was, and believe it or not, that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife has said that the wolf is not endangered. It's not threatened. They have that agency has come out and said they need to be taken off the list. And if they're taken off the list, that then allows you to use control methods of taking a wolf, killing a wolf when it starts eating cattle instead of what is, you know, deer. And why in the world we're flying in the face of the science that U.S. Fish has come out with is unclear. That's what I was talking about on the floor.
Yeah. Is this is there almost a wolf cult in the United States right now that it's almost like a religious fervor? Is that what's been driving some of this? I can't help but wonder.
Well, I think you're being awful. You know, religious probably understates the fanaticism that goes with supporting the wolf. It's ridiculous.
Really?
Yes, it is. And you could listen to the Democrats on the floor of the House in response to my arguments and others about how wonderful the wolf is. And the point here is I'm not trying to get rid of the wolf and wipe them out. No, that's the law says otherwise, even though there are 60,000 wolves and growing in Canada and 5,000 to 10,000 wolves scattered around Alaska. There are lots of wolves. And so the thought that they're somehow going to be wiped out is incorrect. And the law would require otherwise. But to listen to those people talk on the other side of the aisle, the wolf is something that is absolutely essential to the balance of nature, and it is not. Not when you have an apex predator called man that's out hunting. You don't need the wolf. And so when people come in and say, well, we have to have them, the answer is no, we really don't. Mm-hmm. But the law requires it. And so we need the minimum number necessary. The Democrats think otherwise.
Congressman Cliff Bensa with me this morning, Oregon 2nd District, the U.S. Congressman. Congressman, I wanted to shift gears on this a little bit to some other things here, too. And this having to do, I want to make sure we talk about a couple of other things, including some of the recent votes that have come. And my email box is filled up with kind of demoralized residents of the 2nd District. And this having to do with the vote on the FISA court reauthorization. And they're disappointed on that. They're also disappointed that of the $95 billion foreign aid that ended up being voted for the other day, too. And can you explain how that went and why these votes were important and why they ended up coming out the way they did?
Wow, that's about an hour and a half discussion. But very quickly, the FISA vote. I'm on judiciary, and we've spent I do not know how many hours working on FISA and trying desperately to get the warrant requirement fit into the bill.
I knew you wanted that. I remember we've talked about that before, and the goal was to get a warrant if you're going to be surveilling Americans, right? And so what happened with that?
Well, it's okay. So first of all, a warrant is required to spy on Americans. A warrant is required. That is absolutely the case.
Oh.
What allows you to do is spy on and listen in on conversations of foreign people. And then if in the context of you are listening in on a foreign person, somebody mentions a citizen's name, a person in the United States name, the question then was, do you have to go get a warrant to spy on that American citizen? The short answer is yes, you still need a warrant, but if the data that you have available to you in front of you at the time that that American's name comes up or the citizen of the United States comes up, did you have to go get a warrant if it's in that body of data? And that was what the debate was over. If they wanted to get in, CIA or whoever, the National Intelligence Agency, to get into your email box, Bill, they would have to go get a warrant. But if your name came up, someone calls you from Iran and said, hey, Bill, about that school you're about to blow up, mm-hmm. the question then becomes, would they have to go get a warrant to get into your email box? The answer is yes. But to go through and look at the data that they have in front of them, would that require a warrant? The answer is no under the current bill that was passed. Now, because we were unsatisfied with this, we voted for the warrant. It tied, a tie vote. I think it was 215-215. And thus our warrant requirement, which I voted for.
And Mike Johnson ended up being the tie-breaking vote, voting no, right? Speaker Johnson?
Speaker Johnson, I didn't pay much attention to what Speaker Johnson did on that particular vote.
Oh, okay.
All I know is that it tied. He may well have voted no. Now, the no vote would have been driven by his siding with the Intelligence Committee of Republicans, led by Republicans who were adamantly opposed on the intelligence side to the warrant requirement. And the reason they were opposed is because of the delay that having to go get the warrant would occasion in situations where maybe delay is not a good idea. If indeed the telephone call to you that we're using as the obvious ridiculous hypothetical was about blowing somebody up.
Right.
And so he sided with the intelligence community. I sided with the we need a warrant community. It tied. It didn't pass. And then what Mike Johnson did do is shorten the 5-year statute of limitation, length of this law from 5 years to 2 years. So when we get Trump elected here at the end of here in November, then we can go right back in and begin to try to fix this situation. Then Bill, it's complicated, but don't have enough time to go.
And I know, I understand it's complicated. So I think you did a pretty good job of summarizing what had happened. But I wanted to at least get you on the record on that so people knew, okay?
Yeah.
All right. The other one, though, had to do with the funding for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. What happened with that? Because that's something else that my email box is filled up in, and I'm just kind of, okay, I'll tell the congressman. I'm sure you heard from it, too.
I did. So I think that most people would immediately say we need to support Israel and let's help them remain the bastion of stability, which in truth they are in the Middle East, and the fact that we have supported them from literally day one of their existence as a country, and there are groups around them, obviously from the horrific events back in October that mostly destroyed them, and we need to protect them, and that's why I supported, of course, unequivocally the money for Israel on Taiwan. Of course, we face incredible challenges from China wanting to take over Taiwan, and their threats consistently and clear objective to take over Taiwan. And what we're trying to do is make it clear that we're not going to allow that. Taiwan's too important to the world economy to a source of so many different things that we absolutely have to have chips and other things. We have to support Taiwan and make it clear to China that we're going to do so. And that takes us nicely into the Ukraine vote.
And the Ukraine vote, I think, was this something that the only way you get anything for anybody else is that you give Ukraine for the Democrats? Was that kind of it overall? I was thinking that might have been it. I could be wrong.
Well, I'm sure that had a part to play in it because everything is related. And when you're just one vote over one half of one third of the government, you're not going to get everything you want. And we do not control the Senate. We don't control the president. And we just barely control the House. And so everything that you do, if you're going to get anything done, is going to be leavened with.
Yeah, you want this, I get that, right? That's just the way it goes.
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah, we're barely over one half of one third of the group of people making these decisions. And so the challenge, of course, is how in the world do you put anything together that ever makes its way through this place? And it's designed exactly that way. Our government is not designed to allow one person to jam whatever they want through, because that's not how our government works. Thank goodness. But the bottom line here on my vote was that I talked with former ambassador to the Security Council for, I've got the wrong name here, for Europe. I talked to General Ben Hodges, who had been in charge of all of our armies, U.S. armies in Europe. I specifically reached out to different leaders in the military and political space when it comes to Europe, and I talked to these people individually and said, what do we need to do? Here's something that people need to understand. We have a $24 trillion economy. Of that $24 trillion, one-third of that amount, $8 trillion in that neighborhood, is foreign trade. It's trade with other countries. And who is our biggest trading partner? Europe. And what is part of Europe? Ukraine. What does Ukraine have that's hugely important to the future economic elements of development in Europe?
That would be wheat, right? And wheat, first of all?
Wheat, oil, and gas. It's okay. One of the most wealthy mineral countries, blessed mineral sources in Europe, if not the greatest. And why would we allow a person like, a warmonger like Putin to increase his leverage against our biggest trading partner, Europe, by allowing him to take over Ukraine? Why would we do such a thing? And particularly where we can, and by the way, the money going into that portion of the bill is going to our munitions and armament manufacturers, and then those items are shipped to Ukraine. This is not sending a big pile of money to Ukraine in the total. Some money will go to Ukraine, but well over half is going to be spent on munitions and armaments that are then shipped to Ukraine. So this thought that they're getting all of this money, which people then run off with, is untrue. We also put a series of other protections in them to chase down, make sure the money that does go to them is properly spent. But again, the key here is people need to remember, as Ronald Reagan knew, that Russia is not on our side. It is not on our side. People need to remember that.
Congressman Cliff Bentz with me. Congressman, I appreciate the explanation. Just wanted to get your take on the record, okay? And now I want to talk a little bit of party politics before you get back to the day job here, okay? And Republican Congressman Marjorie Taylor Greene, of course, you talked about her before, and Thomas Massie, both are pledging to trigger Greene's motion to fire Speaker Mike Johnson from his position, vacating the position sometime next week. What are your thoughts about this move?
No, thank you so much for asking. First of all, I asked some folks on the floor yesterday when Marjorie was going to pull that trigger, and I was told next week. Whether that's true or not, no one really knows. Probably Marjorie doesn't really know, but her office is just two doors down the hall from me. I haven't talked to her about this issue. I think that such an idea of vacating Speaker Johnson would be the absolute wrong thing to do, and that's because maybe Marjorie forgot about what we went through to try to pick a speaker when I think a bunch of folks that weren't thinking very clearly decided to vacate our previous speaker, McCarthy. That was a signal to everyone that we were dysfunctional and incapable of managing a very, very, very small majority. It only takes literally three people to trigger the vacation and then join the Democrats, and we would be without a speaker. And then we get to go through how many more weeks of trying to select somebody to do the impossible. There's a really good article in Politico, an interview with Newt Gingrich about 2 weeks ago. People should read it. It's really, really well done, and it talks about exactly what you and I are talking about, and asks the interviewer asks Gingrich what he thinks about the situation. And what he says is those who want to depose Speaker Johnson are narcissists and far more focused on themselves than on the country. And if you're going to do the right thing for our country, you don't create dysfunction in Congress that creates the inability to get things done. Congress is an important part of government, and to throw it into disarray, such as Marjorie wants to do, is simply incorrect. And one should ask her, Marjorie, if you want to depose, set aside, vacate that chair, who, Marjorie, do you recommend that's going to do a better job? Someone should ask her that. I haven't heard.
Yeah, I'd also wonder who would actually take the job. It's always been difficult to get someone through there. However, does it not give you pause that the Democrats are getting on record as saying that that essentially Speaker Johnson is trying to keep himself in there with Democrat votes? And then the people at home are kind of like going, oh, okay, so who's he really working for? Do you get any of that kind of comment, or do you understand how that's been appearing?
Yeah, so I think that argument could be made any time that you have a vote that comes out of the House that's bipartisan. Oh, my goodness, you must be working for the other side. That's not true. What Mike is trying to do is make sure that this thing called Congress works when he has a majority of basically one. And so I'll just tell you, getting a group of 218, 219 people, which is our Republican conference, to all want to do the same thing, it's really hard. And that's why it took 3 weeks to select Mike Johnson as speaker, because we had to have basically unanimity. And getting unanimity among 218, 219, 220 people, good luck with that, Bill. And so what ends up happening is, if you want to get anything done in this building, it's going to very probably take more than just the Republicans, because you have to have unanimity, and it's just about impossible. Now, it's not impossible, because we did get Mike selected unanimously, although some of the people, I think, ended up voting present on it, but I don't remember the exact vote now. But the point is, this place needs to work. There's a lot of important stuff that needs to be done. And you're not going to get unanimity among that many people, so thus you're very probably going to have some Democrats involved in some of these votes.
All right, Congressman, I just think about it just at the dinner table. I mean, you get 10 people at the dinner table, you try to get all of them to agree on a big contentious issue, and everyone's going to say the same thing. Good luck. And then I'm thinking, gosh, what would it be like trying to do 217, 218, 219? By the way, who's the House whip? Who's the whip there right now?
Tom Emmer.
What's that now? Boy, yeah, that's the hardest job in Congress right now, isn't it, besides the speaker?
I'm so happy you asked. I just want to say the whip does a really, really important thing. But if I were to wander into Marjorie's office and say, Marjorie, I want you to do this, she's going to go, see the door, goodbye. That's what's going to happen in many of the offices when the whip comes by, or the whip team. And I know, because when the whips come to me and said, well, how are you going to vote on this bill? I go, look, I'm still reading the bill. And so come back later. Well, you need to tell us now. I go, no, I really don't. And so I wouldn't want the whip's job. But when it comes to trying to convince people, frankly, the whip is, you don't see them doing that very often.
Congressman Cliff Betz, we appreciate the take. You're always welcome back, and stay in touch. All right, good luck on getting the wolf delisted, because it sounds like the science is behind you on that one. And we appreciate you being on.
Okay. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you now. U.S. Congressman Cliff Betz, Oregon 2nd District. It is 6:54 at KMED, KCMD.
Looking for a safe place to store your RV, trailer, or boat? Hardcastles offers a secure storage lot located conveniently on site with a keypad entry. With spots filling up quickly, stop by today to reserve yours. While you're there, check out the fully stocked line of enclosed, dump, flatbed, and utility trailers. Hardcastles' friendly and experienced staff are always available to help you find what you need. Open weekdays 8:30 to 5, Saturdays 9 to 3. Hardcastles, where the customer is king.
It's time for the 42nd Annual Southern Oregon Home Show. Anything and everything for your home and property. Coming this May 3rd, 4th, and 5th at the Jackson County Expo. Lots of exhibitors, talk to the experts face-to-face. If you want it, we've got it. Brought to you by the Builders Association Southern Oregon, providing education, advocacy, and policy support for the building industry in our community. See you at the Expo May 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Learn more at our website, buildso.com.
Stay updated on recreational opportunities all over our region with the Outdoor Report every Friday morning just past 7 a.m. on the Bill Meyer Show. The Outdoor Report on KMED and KCMD is powered by Oregon Truck and Auto Authority, your department of adventure off Vilas Road on Airway Drive.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. The Federal Trade Commission will not block ExxonMobil's roughly $60 billion acquisition of Pioneer Natural Resources after reaching an agreement with the energy giant. Pioneer's former CEO, Scott Sheffield, will be barred from joining the Exxon board due to concerns about his prior discussions with OPEC. Exxon first announced the deal for Pioneer last year and said the acquisition would more than double its production. U.S. job openings slid in March to the lowest level in more than 3 years, but stayed at historically high levels, in a sign that the job market remains resilient in the face of higher interest rates. The Labor Department reported employers posted 8.5 million vacancies in March. That is down from 8.8 million in February. It is the fewest job postings since February of 2021. Futures are moderately higher just before the bell. Yesterday, the Dow Industrials gained 87, the NASDAQ down 52. That's your money now.
This ad furnished by Nesmontage LLC. Offer not valid in all states or where prohibited by law. Loans are subject to lender approval. See website for details.
Honey, the credit card bill came, and we're maxed out.
Great. Maxed out cards, rent is due, bills are piling up. We just need some extra cash to help us get by.
We should do what my brother did. He went to 27cash.com and got $3,000.
With our bad credit?
27cash.com is different. They're one of the largest personal loan networks. They can help people with any type of credit get up to $5,000.
I'm sure there's a lot of paperwork.
Nope. My brother said it was fast and easy. He did it right from his phone.
If you have a regular source of income, you can be approved for a loan of up to $5,000 in minutes, and your cash can hit your bank account as soon as the next day. Our lenders have millions of dollars to lend regardless of your credit history.
Great news. I went to 27cash.com and we'll have our money as soon as tomorrow.
Wow, that is fast.
If you need extra cash, go to 27cash.com. That's 27cash.com. 27cash.com.
106.3 KMED, 99.3 KCMD. This is the Bill Myers Show.
6:58 and an email or two of the day. That's sponsored by Central Point Family Dentistry and Dr. Steve Nelson. It's just next to the new Mazatlan Mexican restaurant in Central Point, and they take pride in same-day crowns. They have a local lab. In fact, it's in-house there. They just go to the back, and they start grinding up a crown. Very good stuff. Highest quality. Many crowns made in foreign countries and can be suspect. Not at Central Point Family Dentistry. They do it. Good stuff there. All right, centralpointfamilydentistry.com. Numerous emails. I'll try to get a couple of them in here. Hang on just a second. There we go. Just trying to find my place. I'm going to give an email of the day to Jerry the Bull Varner, about the charter issue. It says, Bill, yesterday Francine commented that some of her acquaintances live in disbelief regarding the destruction of Southern Oregon and our nation in general. There are probably many reasons for this, but the main one is trust. To be conned, the con man or woman has to sell you the lie and get you to believe it. One has to trust them. They may dress nice and be well-spoken, educated, and attractive, too, which they use to acquire trust. But one has to believe their lie in order for it to take root. And usually we don't realize we are agreeing with them and being deceived because their lie is supposedly very beneficial for us. Southern Oregon is one of the most beautiful places in America, as Mr. X has stated. If we wish it to remain this way, we have to be willing to inconvenience ourselves and think and take action. We have to stop believing lies and standing for truth, even if it is unpopular. We have to have conviction. I will reach out to others and encourage them to reject the charter commissioner issues. Yeah, 15-224-225-226. And by the way, if you're in Joe County, no on 17-116. Okay, folks? Now, Jerry, it's a very interesting take, and you're absolutely right. By the way, Francine was right, and God bless Francine for going after these people. All I was trying to get at is sometimes we, in order to try to get an ally, we want them to try to believe everything that we know to be true here from just our observations. And sometimes I just don't want to overload people with, hey, they're lying about the dams, and they are lying about the dams, and they're doing this, and they're lying this about this. Go to this website. No. The battle at hand, the actual battle on the ground, I just don't want to lose focus right now in this particular battle, and that is to get voter turnout and kill these charter amendments. That's all I'm going to – I'm not – because the Klamath Dam, all that other stuff, it's not on there. I just don't want to be distracted by it. It's like I don't want to get someone to vote for it because they agree with me on vaccine policy, let's say, or anything else. I'm just saying just concentrate and focus on the voter turnout aspect of it. And God bless the activists that are going out there in doing that, including you, Francine. Love you. Give you a nice little warm radio hug. All I'm saying is that just keep the issue to the charter and the lies of Jackson County for all communists. Okay? There we go. It's a minute after 7. And let's see. Randy writes me this morning from Ashland. Broken record, he says. Marjorie Taylor Greene wants to remove Speaker Johnson, but Democrats have vowed to vote to keep Johnson. That says everything we need to know about how Johnson is running the House. Johnson has given Democrats everything they want. Why is it Republicans are incapable of electing a speaker dedicated to pursuing a conservative agenda? Well, Randy, if you were listening to Congressman Cliff Betz, you have one vote majority and the Republicans are not united. It's a math problem. All right. Just saying. Appreciate the email, Bill at BillMyersShow.com.